Well, good morning, everyone, and welcome to TI Fluid Systems' third quarter trading update conference call. Thank you for joining us. I am Hans Dieltjens, CEO and President, and I'm here with Alexander De Bock, our CFO. I will start with a short overview of the key highlights of the quarter, and Alexander will go through the numbers, and then we will take your questions as usual. We've had a strong trading performance with constant currency revenue growth of 12.4% in the first 9 months of the year. All regions and both segments delivered good growth. The vast majority of the growth relates to market volume, launches, and pricing. Now, FCS in particular has benefited from higher thermal management volumes on a number of electrical vehicle programs that are ramping up. We also continue to benefit from inflationary cost recoveries. So as we've had already indicated, the bulk of the agreements were concluded in H1. There were also a small number of additional agreements concluded in quarter three. We have continued to outperform globalized vehicle production by 340 basis points in the first 9 months of 2023. This has been driven by inflationary cost recoveries and launches, partially offset by the strong growth of local Chinese OEMs. For the third quarter, constant currency revenue growth was 7% against the prior year comparative, which benefited from the recovery in automotive production. This is also reflected in global light vehicle production, which increased by 3.8%. The quarter was mainly strong in Europe and North America, with China remaining weaker in terms of performance against the market. From an outperformance point of view, Q3 was mainly driven by inflationary cost recoveries and partially by launches. Overall, across our three key regions, global revenue growth in the year to date has been driven by market volumes, pricing, and as I said, new launches. In the US, we had a very strong 9 months. Revenue growth was 15.4% at constant currency, and we outperformed the market by 410 basis points. This outperformance was driven by volume growth as well as inflationary cost recoveries. Despite the UAW strikes, we had a very good quarter three. The impact in September was minimal, with only a couple of our FCS plants impacted. Some of the lost revenues were offset as the OEMs reallocated volumes, which means that some of our plants actually indirectly benefited from the strike. As things stand, all of the big three OEMs have reached tentative agreements with the UAW. Assuming the outcome is a full resolution, the main impact would be limited to October, pending the ability of the OEMs to ramp up production quickly. Overall, we do not expect it to affect our guidance, and we're hopeful for some volume recovery during the last 2 months of the year. Constant currency growth in Europe was 15.3% in the first 9 months, also a very strong performance. In quarter three, we have seen some market volatility, including flooding in Slovenia, which has disrupted production at a large OEM. BEV volumes have also been lower than expected for some of the global OEMs. So far, however, the teams have managed the impact on our production very well. And finally, Asia Pacific, where we grew at 5.9% in the first 9 months, we saw remaining softness largely due to China. In China, we did experience some delays to launches and volumes have been slower to ramp up on new programs. At the same time, the domestic OEMs have continued their growth in market share, which continues to provide some mixed effects. But looking ahead, we remain focused on new launches and on increasing our share with the local OEMs. This is already delivering. We've launched over 30 new programs in China this year. As these programs ramp up and we launch other programs booked more recently, we expect to close the gap to market in the coming periods. Now a few words on bookings. So far this year, we have been awarded BEV bookings with lifetime revenue of 818 million euros, up from 649 million in the first half of the year. Roughly half of these bookings are in China. We have some strategically important wins, including a number of brake line awards, in China with BYD, which will ramp up from late 2024 into next year. The revenues attached are modest, but these are an entry point into an important future customer for TIFS. We have also had an additional award for our ITMA module. This is an extension of an existing award secured in Europe into Asia, and it's another important step as we build our position in this new and growing market driven by electrification. In terms of strategic progress, we announced the acquisition of Cascade Engineering in Europe in early September. Cascade is a great business which will increase our market share in connectors for electrical vehicles. I have also just returned from the opening of our fourth e-mobility innovation center, or EMIC, in Jiading, Shanghai last week. The event was a great success and very well attended by our customers. Our latest EMIC will help us deliver our strategy in China, providing our customers with a one-stop shop and helping us accelerate our speed to the market. Finally, towards the end of the third quarter, we held our third Capital Markets Day, setting out how we will deliver sustainable long-term growth through the automotive industry's transition to the electrification, combined with our plan to reach double-digit margins. Our Taking the Turn strategy is focused on driving profitable growth with clear midterm targets as a full year 2026 revenue target of 3.8 billion-4.2 billion euros and over 4.5 billion euros by 2030 on a constant currency basis. A return to double-digit adjusted EBIT margin in the medium term and an adjusted free cash flow conversion of 30% of adjusted EBITDA. We have the right strategy for delivering growth and profitability, and our Q3 performance shows that we are on track. And now I will hand you over to Alexander to take you through some of the financial details.
Thank you, Hans, and good morning, everyone. During the first 9 months of 2023, revenues increased to just over 2.6 billion euro. This represents strong growth of 12.4% at constant currency and 9% at actual exchange rates. The currency headwind is mainly due to the strengthening of the euro against the Chinese renminbi and the US dollar. While the trading update is focused on revenue, I can also share some color on profit and cash flow evolution, capital allocation, and our outlook for the full year. Our Q3 profit performance has been in line with our expectations, taking into account the typical seasonality over the summer period. We have continued to benefit from the inflationary cost recovery agreements achieved in the first half, and we have also concluded a small number of additional agreements in Q3. As expected, labor inflation remains relatively high and is partially offset by our continued focus on productivity and disciplined cost management. I'm also very pleased with the financial discipline the teams are showing in managing the impact of the UAW strikes, as well as some recent volume volatility in Europe. In addition, we are making progress with converting our profits improvements into cash. And as a consequence, we feel comfortable with the guidance we shared in early August, which included sales growth outperforming the market growth and an adjusted EBIT margin of above 7%. With this, we are well on track for 2023 to represent a major step towards our mid-term double-digit adjusted EBIT margin target and well above the 5.5% we delivered in 2022. We continue to expect strong cash conversion of around 30% of adjusted EBITDA. We have also made excellent progress with implementing our revised capital allocation policy, which balances investment in long-term growth with attractive shareholder returns whilst maintaining a strong balance sheet. Hans has already mentioned our acquisition, Cascade Engineering. As a reminder, we are investing just over 25 million euro to acquire a business generating revenue of around 35 million euro on an annual basis. The transaction is well on track to complete in the next couple of days. We also prepaid 100 million euro of our term loan in August and paid the interim dividend in September under our new progressive dividend policy. Moreover, we successfully launched our 40 million euro share buyback program. To date, we have bought back 1.4 million shares at a total cost of £1.7 million, and the program continues. We have also continued to deleverage. Net debt to EBITDA has further reduced to 1.7 times at 30th September, down from 2.2 times 12 months ago and 1.8 times at the end of H1. Our progress with executing our strategy for growth and rebuilding profitability in combination with a balanced capital allocation policy has also translated into a credit rating upgrade by S&P to BB just a few days ago. So to conclude, I'm really pleased with our disciplined execution, and I feel confident in our full-year guidance. With that, I will hand the call back to Hans.
Well, thank you, Alexander. Let's now move to questions, please.
Thank you. If you'd like to ask a question today, please press star followed by one on your telephone keypad. When preparing to ask your question, please ensure you are unmuted locally, and participants are asked to limit themselves to two questions per person. That's star followed by one on your telephone keypad. The first question today comes from George Galliers from Goldman Sachs. George, please go ahead. Your line is open.
Yeah, thank you for taking my question. I had a question just with respect to the broader industry and potential implications for TI. Over the course of the third quarter reporting season and more generally, we've seen both OEMs and Tier 1 suppliers talk about a slowdown or potential slowdown in demand for battery electric vehicles. From your perspective, are you hearing anything similar from the OEMs? And if yes, do you see it as transitory or more permanent? And from a business perspective, what are the broader implications for you if we actually see plug-in hybrid and other hybrid technologies have a longer glide path than was previously anticipated? Would that be a net positive? Thank you.
Yes, thank you, George. what we are seeing in the last period is indeed a slowdown of battery electrical vehicle productions, car sales in the market. This is mainly down to Europe, and we do see that effect as well going forward into the next period. Is this permanent? That is very difficult to say. We have always communicated that we see a growth of battery electrical vehicles mainly enter for some while in a plateau phase, and then after that see further growth going forward as several elements around the battery electrical vehicles materialize and are put in place. Now, importantly to TI Fluid Systems, is this impacting our business? Actually, it is not impacting our business. We are a very agnostic company. Our product lines cover as well ICE, hybrid, as battery electrical vehicles, so a move between the different powertrains does not really affect our business going forward. And actually, we see some more movement into the plug-in hybrid vehicles going forward, what offers additional opportunity for TI Fluid Systems as we provide specific solutions and we have basically a double powertrain into this vehicle. So our CPV for that sort of vehicle is actually higher.
Great, thank you. And then maybe a follow-up question for Alex. I realize, you know, we're only in November and don't want to get too engrossed in 2024, but just based on the moving pieces that you can see at this point, is there any reason why 2024 margin shouldn't be at least as good as what you end up achieving this year? Thank you.
Well, I think it's too early to really comment much about 2024. I think for us what's important is our long-term strategy to go back to double-digit margin. I think coming from 5.5% last year, we make a significant step forward. And I think our commitment remains the same. Of course, there are moving pieces in the global economy that we need to observe, and we need to see how we put it in the model for next year, but I think it's too early to make a firm statement about 2024 yet. But again, the trajectory and strategy, it doesn't change.
Great, thank you very much.
Yeah.
The next question comes from Vanessa Jeffriess from Jefferies. Vanessa, your line is open. Please go ahead.
Morning, guys. Well done. I was just wondering if you could break down the volume and price a little bit more for the third quarter. I get that you said it's mostly price, but also interesting that you said you've reached a few more agreements. Do you see yourself reaching any more in the fourth quarter, and how do you think about pricing going into 2024?
Yeah, well, as said, we reached a couple more agreements in Q3. We will finalize a couple more into Q4. That is according our plan, and actually nothing that is not foreseen for us. As we communicated before, our H1, the significant majority of the deals could be made. Basically, they are implemented now as we speak. And there is a one or two more to go, but they are in the last stages of finalization, so we do not expect any impact into that. When it comes to pricing for 2024, we are currently looking to have a similar level of recoveries, obviously, as most of the pricing agreements have been reflected into the piece prices, so we see a similar a path going forward into 2024.
Great, thank you. And I was wondering if it was possible for you to also disclose your hybrid and ICE bookings as well as your BEV ones that you've disclosed?
Excuse me, I didn't get the question there, Vanessa. As you said, hybrid bookings?
Yeah, sorry, you've given us the BEV number. I was wondering if it was possible to have the hybrid number as well.
Yeah, we didn't disclose it this time, but it's in line with expectations. What we do see is in the market when it comes to hybrid or on ICE bookings is that there is a lower level of bookings out there as a lot of the businesses carry over, what means that you roll into a extension or program with the same product line. So you do see somewhat fluctuation when it comes to the booking number, but overall, It's simply a continuation of our history. We don't see any large moves into there.
Great. Thank you so much.
The next question comes from Harry Phillips from Peel Hunt. Harry, please go ahead. Your line is open.
Good morning, everyone. A couple of questions, if I could. Just in terms of the buyback, just wanting to get a better understanding at the pace of which you're going. I know you mentioned just a few minutes ago, Alex, I think it was 1.4 million shares and value of 1.7. I haven't got my calculator out yet, but I'm guessing that takes us reasonably into the first quarter next year in terms of potential completion of that, just so maybe some more light on that if you could. And then secondly, just thinking about raw material prices and such as steel beginning to come down quite quickly. How does that factor into 24 revenue? And obviously, if you keep your sort of profit right, then obviously margins would clearly tick up just on the basis of a lower raw material content. But appreciate, obviously, it's still November 23 at the current time.
So maybe I can start with the buyback question, Harry. So what we announced is a buyback program of up to 40 million euro. So far, we have executed 1.7 million pounds, so roughly 2 million euros. The buyback program is a program that will run into Q2 next year. The idea is to really execute that in a relatively stable manner over this period. So I hope that clarifies the buyback program.
That's nice and clear. Thank you. And it's just to say, in some of the raw materials, and particularly steel, which is very clearly lower than where it's been beginning of the year, say.
Yes, we do see some improvements in the raw material prices. Not all of them, have some that are more linked to oil, we do not see necessarily the same effect. but just remember that they remain on a relatively high level coming from our history on them. So that is a positive point. Will we see that reflected into our margin pickup? Have to understand that what we have done over the history is try to index most of our raw material prices in order to assure we'll limit the variation. So you will see temporarily some positive input on that, but over the long run, we should be quite in line when it comes to pricing on our raw material exposure.
Fantastic. And then just slip another one in. Just in terms of OE volatility in terms of offtake, I mean, it's still a way off where it was industry-wide pre-COVID. I was just wondering how, not, say Europe rather than North America because of the UAW, but is there any indication that there just could be sort of more improvements in a more stable market in 24, or are you sort of still thinking current volatility levels will just be the new norm going forward?
Well, I would say, Harry, we plan for the worst, knowing the industry, and we manage through it as it comes. I learned over my tenure that this is very difficult to predict, and there is a large set of influencing factors that play into this role. But I think in the meantime, we have set up our operations and our structure so that we have a better ability to deal with this level of fluctuation going forward. Having said that, it is expected currently that next year will be relatively flat when it comes to production volumes. So we do are hopeful that that will initiate the level of stability into the market and into the call-offs in our different facilities.
Well, that's great. I like the promising low and delivering high is always a good combination. So thank you for that.
Yeah.
The next question comes from Akshay Thakkar from JP Morgan. Akshay, your line is open. Please go ahead.
Morning, Hans. Morning, Alex. Akshay from JP Morgan. Two from my side, please. Morning. The first one, again, on the industry and your relationship with the OEMs. So Mercedes, which is one of your biggest customers, has talked about higher supplier compensation, and not just in the second half of this year, but also going forward in 2024. And this covers, from their point of view, not only inflation, but also structurally lower industry volumes between 2020 and 2023. So basically two parts to the question. What kind of discussions are you having with Mercedes or any other major customer of yours along these lines? And the second part is, could these discussions still lead to more retroactive compensation linked to previous fiscal years? And the second question is a simple one. When I think about the organic revenue growth in the third quarter of more than 7%, how much of that was pricing alone, please? Thank you.
Yeah, overall, when we discuss the recoveries and increases with the customer base, we do include a set of inflationary increases, but we do look also at the other elements of the business. This is mainly volume or volume reductions. Specifically on the Mercedes example, we did include in our negotiations a portion of recoveries when it comes to the volume situation into the market, and have actually also been successfully into negotiating that element of the impacts in our business. Do we include previous years? We generally do not include previous years of volumes, as what typically happens with our contracts is that the end or at the lifetime of the contract, this gets overall put on the table, as mostly there is to the later years some volume fluctuation either up or under in order to provide a complete picture for the lifetime of this program. And that gets then adjusted at that point in time. I think on the last question, I'd refer to Alex.
Yeah, Akshat, in terms of pricing, maybe want to look back at H1. In H1, we announced that pricing for H1 was roughly 71 million euro of pricing on a gross level, which was more than offsetting the inflation in H1, which was at 33 million back at that time. If we look into Q3, I think we see similar trends as what was going on in H1. Without quoting specific number, I think that gives directionally the impact, Akshat. Basically a continuation of what we've seen in H1, roughly.
That's helpful. Thank you both.
Yeah.
The next question comes from Dominic Convey from Numis. Dominic, your line is open. Please go ahead.
Good morning, gents. Yeah, thanks for taking questions. I just wonder whether you could give us a little bit more color on what your working assumptions are for global light vehicle production for the second half of this year. I understand there's been a little bit of movement in industry forecasts. Then linked to that, how we should think about relative performance for yourselves on a constant currency basis next year, given this China dynamic. I think at the Capital Markets Day, you did say that you expected to outperform light vehicle production in China next year. Then just another question, if I may, just in terms of the UAW, so fingers crossed that these agreements get ratified. Do you think there's a danger that at some point some of this UAW pain will ultimately get pushed down and shared with the suppliers?
Yeah. Well, on the UAW side, I do consider that there is going to be a flow over to the supply base at some point. We are obviously carefully watching that and managing through that as with anything. Now, for TI itself, we have one facility really only that is unionized with the UAW, so we're in a little bit different situation. As said, we will follow up that situation as we go forward, and we'll communicate at the appropriate points about what we do see that the impact is going to be there. For the second half of the year, when it comes to the global production volume, indeed, as you correctly stated, there is some movement in the planning of that, and we have been carefully watching this movement in global production volume. Overall, what we have seen is that what we have done is, and what we see is that our revenue projections that we have done did not necessarily change so much. We saw a bigger move in the volume forecast than we saw in our revenue projections, so we're pretty confident to reach the year-end number that we have seen. What we saw is that in the last month, volumes have increased, or production volumes have increased, mainly in China, roughly 1 million vehicles. We are still analyzing and looking upon what that exactly is. We do not see necessarily an impact for us coming from that. Back into next year, your question on our performance, especially in China. Also in China, we still see a lot of volatility in the volumes, also in the volume predictions. We remain very careful on communicating what it is. What we can see in China is that we are progressing very well. We are launching the programs, although that we do see here and there some delays in the launches, what is not that normal. Being in China also a week ago, I can see from the atmosphere there that I do think there is a good and a positive chance to pick up in next year.
Thank you.
The next question comes from Tom Swift from Morgan Stanley. Tom, your line is open. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning, Hans. Good morning, Alex. Just, I guess, pose a question from the credit side. Obviously, there's been a little bit more of de-leveraging since the first half. Do you have a leverage target in mind, either for the end of the year or over next year? On top of that, in terms of, can you just give us a reminder of your mix in China between the local OEMs and the international OEMs, please? Thank you.
I can first answer the leverage question. as part of the capital allocation policy, we made it clear that we want to make sure we invest in the long term as well as provide proper returns to our shareholders in the short term. Now, we want to make sure that this is on the back of a strong balance sheet, and therefore we do want to have a delever. In terms of target, we have shared that we, in the long term, we would anticipate we would hover around the 1.5 times. That's a level we would feel very comfortable with. And we would we expect to reach that level early 2024. And then going forward, we expect to remain roughly in that at that level.
Okay, I think the second part of your question was, I believe on the bookings, what is the split between local and global OEMs, or did I misunderstood that?
No, that's right.
Okay, all right, okay. So when you look at China, where basically the question is around, I assume, what we saw in our progression in bookings for Q3 is similar to what we saw historically. We do see about a 50-50 split between the local OEMs and the international OEMs as we were progressing during the year for the bookings in China.
Thank you. That's very clear. Thank you very much.
The next question comes from Mark Wren from Credit Suisse. Mark, your line is open. Please go ahead.
Hi there, Mark Wren from Credit Suisse. Yeah, just following on the China program launches. You say you've launched 30 programs year to date with more planned last year. I was just wondering if you could disclose how many of the 30 is with local Chinese OEMs and how many will be with local OEMs for the rest of the year. And just a quick follow-up on that, how long does it generally take for a new program to reach its full run rate? Thank you.
Yeah, a new program to launch in China is actually quite a good question, because what we see is quite a difference in what we historically saw in program ramp-ups and in program launch timing compared to what we currently experience in China. Historically, you could see that new cars will launch in a time frame from up to 2.5, maybe up to 4 years, pending the different OEMs and pending the complexity of that launch. We can see now in China that we go down to 1.5 year to launch a car or even shorter. What means that the supply base really needs to follow this this new strategy and these new elements in the market in order to be a supplier into that market. Now, we have specifically set up our structure in China with the local supply base with our launch of our EMIC in order to assure we deliver that speed that is necessary in order to become a part, especially for the local OEMs in China to become a part there. I think your other part of the question was looking forward, what do we think the split is going to be between local and global OEMs in China. We do consider it to be similar to what we see now. There are still quite a very interesting amount of global platforms that will be launched in China as well, that we are historically being part of, and that we envision to be part of also in the future, and are driving positively towards doing that. And then as we increase our share with the local OEMs, driven by our local structure, local supply base, local engineering, to move ahead about this 50-50% split that I communicated before.
The next question comes from Will Regis from Peel Hunt. Will, your line is open. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much. Good morning, Hans. Good morning, Alex. Also, just in reference back to the CMD earlier in September, we were discussing the transformation of the ICE business and how important that is in terms of that journey to the double-digit margin target medium term. Is there anything that you can update us on progress as far as that area is concerned, please?
Well, actually, the Capital Markets Day was just a couple of weeks ago, so no major change to what we communicated at that time. I think just what's important is the year 2023 is a major step forward towards that target. Last year, we were at 5.5% EBIT commitment is double-digit midterm. So with an outlook to be above 7% this year, I think we make significant progress this year. So I would say all in line with what we shared back at the time of the Capital Markets Day. Also, the building blocks, no change at this stage.
Thank you.
This concludes today's Q&A session, so I'll hand the call back to CEO and President Hans Dieltjens for some closing remarks.
Okay, well, thank you all for joining today, and thanks for your interest. But I'd like to leave you with a couple of key messages, if I can. First, I believe we made great progress, and this is thanks to the hard work of the whole team. We had another strong quarter, and we are delivering on our commitments. We are also making great progress with our Taking the Turn strategy, and I am confident that there is more to come on this matter. We have clear midterm targets for sustainable growth and the return to double-digit adjusted EBIT margins. And finally, we are on track to deliver our full-year guidance. And with that, I would like to close the call. Thank you very much.